because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's summary of this week in the Capitol. J.R., there's a lot of big budget fish that have yet to be fried. So we'll, before we get to that, my nominee for the best Capitol drama of the week, Prevailing Wage.
Yes.
Well, let's go through what happened. So Speaker Voss says, I don't have the votes, and he downplays it. But then Representative Andre Jacques of Door County, Green Bay, schedules a committee meeting of his labor committee.
Goes rogue, yeah.
Goes rogue. And then has an exec, and 5-4 in favor of the bill, AB 32, votes it out. Voss says that wasn't, I'm paraphrasing, that wasn't helpful. Mm-hmm. Not going to schedule a full assembly vote on AB 32. And you've seen the quotes, Andre Jacques can't count.
Yeah.
So what happens next on this thing?
Likely they put some kind of quote-unquote reform in the budget, and they don't do a full repeal. And here's why. I've talked to people all week about this, and the sense is, if Voss put this on the floor, maybe the bill gets 50 votes, maybe. Now, if you look at the committee vote, it was 5-4, one Republican defected, right?
Yeah.
And then Bob Culp, who was a co-author of the bill,
yes,
paused because he said, I don't really want to take this vote right now. He's a co-author of the bill. That tells you there's some issues there.
One of the five votes, JR, was Dan Knodel, who's an assistant majority leader. Excuse me, he's a member of leadership. So
maybe you get to 50 votes on the floor, all right? It's not going to happen in the Senate for a couple of reasons. One, you have 19 votes in the Senate. You can lose two and pass that bill. There are more than two people in the Senate, Republican Senate caucus, who don't want to do prevailing wage for a number of reasons.
Mark Klein.
He already voted against the committee.
He did. He's got Kramer Construction in his district.
Petrosky already voted against
right to work,
noting he's a former union guy. I could go down the list of probably half a dozen members that people go, I don't think he or she wants to vote for prevailing wage. Why would you put your caucus through a vote on the floor, a tough vote, for no resolution in the Senate? It doesn't make any sense. And you know, as leader as well, you almost never put a bill on the floor you don't know what the outcome is going to be. I can think in my 15 years here of one bill that didn't pass when it was put on the floor for a vote. It's an ethanol bill when Schultz was Majority Leader Beck 10 years ago. Yeah. I know there have been others I've asked the last 20 years, but right. In my 15, I can remember one. So why would you do that? Now, you can get possibly a quote-unquote again reform, which would be raising the threshold when prevailing wage kicks in.
Kind of the NAS compromise, which also failed.
Also wanted to exempt local projects.
True.
So that's a little bit different. Raising the threshold when it kicks in, and then B, the way the wage is figured out is you do a survey of employers or contractors to figure, okay, what do you pay, and do this calculation. They think if they would simplify the survey, if you will, more people would fill it out, more small businesses would fill it out. It would lower the wage because you'd have a greater pool, if you will, of information. So what's likely to happen is that. A full repeal is not going to happen. Now, what's interesting is Talk Radio Milwaukee, Charlie Sykes, has made this like their cause.
Clarion call.
They are beating up on Voss about this left and right. AFP Wisconsin is now doing a radio ad urging people to call Robin Voss.
Call Robin Voss. Tell him to allow a vote on prevailing wage.
What's interesting is Scott Fitzgerald has said, I don't have the votes either. But they're not beating up on him. They're beating up on Robin. But it is drama. It is interesting. It's intrigue. But the bottom line is there aren't the votes, from what they tell us, to get this through.
Well, but let's look inside the Assembly GOP caucus. Does Speaker Voss have a mini revolt on his hands here on this issue? Or will he ultimately prevail?
Well, what are you going to do? Here's the thing. Any leader, not just Robin, anybody else, if you get crosswise with your caucus, you risk being deposed. You need 32 votes to do that in the Assembly Republican caucus right now.
Yep.
Two things. One, who would you replace him with? And two, if Robin heard about that, he would snuff it out and snuff it out quickly.
Yeah.
So if you can get 10 votes, great, but Robin will make sure that you're no longer chair.
Yes.
No longer have staff. No longer have, I mean, you could do all kinds of things to punish you for a revolt. I don't see or don't sense that there is a real push right now to like, oh, we're going to rise up against Robin Voss and either overturn him or somehow go around him. He's not going to happen.
But a month from now, will Representative Andre Jacques still be chair of the Labor Committee?
Good question. There are ways to punish. Now, if you take away his chairmanship, it makes him a martyr for the people who really push prevailing wage repeal. What you can do, though, is you can, for example, no longer send bills to his committee. If he has no bills, he has no committee. In effect. So there are ways. I mean, I've talked to some Republicans who will tell you that as a leader, you can't have chairmen who don't have some autonomy feel like, well, I do whatever I want to do, no matter what the speaker or the Senate majority leader says. So there will be some kind of like measure of I'm the boss,
yeah.
But how do you dole it out? Is kind of question.
Final question on this issue. When Andre Jacques says there are some of us who feel that unless a full repeal is part of the budget, we're not going to vote for the budget. Is he speaking for maybe himself and only a few others, or is that a real threat?
I know Sykes, for example, is brazen that prospect, trying to prod people to rise up against the budget. Well, here's the thing. If you put prevailing wage in, you're also going to lose votes in the Senate. It won't pass either. So what do you do? Okay. I just don't see it being, I don't see repeal going in, full repeal,
yeah,
going to the budget as we sit here today. Now, I get the impression finance won't finish up until early next week now because there are some big ticket items hanging out there.
Yep, which we'll get to in a minute.
Hey, 4 days is a long time, you know, in finance time. But I just don't, right now, I just don't see how it goes in the budget.
Okay, other topic. The must be interesting. Wouldn't you like to sit through some of the negotiations on the Bucks arena? You have like seven players. You have the legislature, you have the governor's office, you have DOA, you have the Bucks executives, you have the city of Milwaukee, you have the county of Milwaukee, and they're all trying to cook this grand stew. It seems to me one of the most complex deals that we've seen in a long time,
yes,
maybe going back to Miller Park.
Oh, yeah, before my time. But we've been hearing for a couple of weeks that the Center District was the new vehicle, if you will, to do this, and that they were looking at that plus, you know, collecting old debts, all these kind of moving pieces to get to a deal, if you will.
Right.
And so they seem like they've got the cake at least mixed. It's not baked yet. The lawyers are doing the drafting and the make sure everything figures out. The next hurdle is going to be, though, is the locals. So does the county board have to sign off? Does the city council?
Yep.
By the way, there are two aldermen on the city council who are currently running as Mayor Barrett, or plan to run as Mayor Barrett,
Donovan,
for mayor next year.
Yep, Donovan. And
do you think they're going to let this pass without like raising a stink? Or the county board is going to say, Executive Abley, go ahead. You take care. We're going to bow down to you.
I am only comfortable laying out the broad parameters that the Journal Sentinel did. The local and state support is 250. Mm-hmm. Then you get 150 from the current owners.
Yep.
Then former owner and former senator Herb Kohlchips and 100, but you have all these others, as you were saying. You have the room tax potentially going to go up from 2.5% to 3%. The car rental tax, the food and beverage surtax. So you have, and then the state's going to collect Milwaukee County debt.
Yes, the state actually has a service that I think was created in 2009. That you can contract with the state to go and collect outstanding debts. Now, these are things like citations that haven't been paid, things like that. Now, what also is a program that you can, the TRIP program, Tax Return Intercept Program. So let's say you owe the city of Milwaukee for parking tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You file your tax return and you're going to get a refund. They can grab a piece of that and say, well, you owe this money to here. We can grab it there. Now, what I've been hearing is that the Department of Revenue is convinced that there's a good pool of money, like $4-6 million, that could be a year that could be grabbed from this stream if the locals did it. The reason why they wouldn't, you would think, collect those debts would be they have a private service doing it already for, like, you're talking statewide.
Yeah.
Or they just haven't got around to it yet.
So would it work? Hi, I'm from the Department of Revenue. Pay up what you owe the County of Milwaukee?
Revenue has many levers to push, if you will, to grab money because of, you know, what revenue is.
Wow. And then the city contribution, $25 million and then $12 million in a TIF,
mm-hmm,
so $37 million.
And talk radio is raising some concerns in Milwaukee that there's no real money up front, if you will, from the city.
Yeah.
That's a concern. If you look at the way the center works, they have bonds that were let out already for the convention center. The first run, I think, ends in 2027. So starting in 2028,
mm-hmm,
there's revenue freed up from that.
Mm-hmm.
The next batch, 2032. So they've got money, but it's not for a while. You have to bridge that gap to then.
And meanwhile, Walker says, he parses it this way. If you raise the room tax from 2.5% to 3%, it's not a new tax.
But a registration fee increase is.
On transportation, which we'll get to. Well, let's talk about, okay, done with the Bucks. So you think a deal is going to get done, but not tonight, not tomorrow morning, not this weekend.
It is possible. Anything is possible in finance.
At this point.
But I just see that they have to kind of figure everything out. Now let's ruck through this, okay? We've got UW System up today.
Yep.
With the cut that's going to take.
Now we're going into the big three issues.
Yes.
Yes.
UW System's up today. Department of Natural Resources is up today.
Yep.
Department of Revenue is up today. We've got the general fund taxes on the agenda. We've got the Bucks Arena, the entertainment district, and we have transportation.
Transportation.
Now, if they just do omnibus motions on all of them, by the way, there's also a wrap-up motion coming. That'll be a Christmas tree, if you will.
What everybody needs to vote for the final budget.
So there is no fewer than a half dozen omnibus motions that could. I don't think they can get that done in 24 hours.
Okay.
So, and with transportation, there is a big hitch where they seem like they have three options right now. Because Governor Walker said, I will not sign a gas tax increase or a fee increase. So lawmakers could pass this transportation budget with a fee increase and say, okay, Governor, we're going to lower bonding down to $800, $900 million. That's our target.
Yep.
And you want $1.3 billion. We're going to lower it. We're going to raise a fee to kind of help backfill some of it and give it to you. You want to veto it? Go right ahead. They could do that. They could say, okay, he's not going to sign a fee increase. We're going to lower bonding anyway to our target and say, okay, Governor, your administration, cut projects.
You name the projects that are going to be delayed.
Now, the issue with that is they all know if they give it to DOT to do that, the zoo will get funded. Everything else, we'll start to see some, you know, pieces chip away.
Right.
Or they could be the bad guys and say which projects get cut, but then they've got to, you know, hash out amongst themselves of what's going to be funded. And the zoo is what, 3/4 of all of our commerce traffic goes to that interchange or something like that.
It's the busiest intersection in the state.
You drive through it now, it looks like a you know, Beirut back in the 80s.
It's
like a war-torn country. I just, you know, they know that the governor will make sure that keeps going.
What are you hearing on the UW? Are they going to have to come pretty close to that $300 million cut over two that Walker recommended in February?
It seems like if some Republicans would like to find a way to lower it somewhat, and some Republicans are going, I'm okay with that.
Yep.
$300 million, I can live with that cut. So we'll see an omnibus package on them, I'm sure, today. I've heard there could be 4 dozen items in that omnibus package that covers the gamut of things, but you know, they're going to get a good nick. You know, that's just the way it is. The money is not there right now.
And what about the ban on buying more property under the stewardship program for 13 years until 2028?
Good question. Robin Voss a while ago was saying, I would like there to be some kind of room, if you will, to do this. I don't think we should just kind of cut off everything, because it's different for his district, because he's in southeastern Wisconsin, where valuable properties that are part of, you know, various, you know, long-term projects, they're being gobbled up, versus up north where a lot of property owned already. So there's different pressures right now.
That's a priority for the speaker. I think people might be interested. You and I are veterans of this late evening, early morning JFC process. Why is it that all these deals are cut in secret and then they come out with a 40-page omnibus package?
Can you imagine them negotiating at the table? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we all, it's not necessarily good government, if you will, that it's done behind closed doors, but how do you negotiate anything in public? I mean, let's go back to, was it 2002-ish? They did the compromise, a budget committee with Chuck Koala at one side and Scott Jensen on the other.
Uh-huh.
And Chuck Koala would make his speech, and then he'd turn around and sign constituent papers and, like, not pay attention, Republicans talk. It was a pointless exercise of futility. We sat there in that room sweltering in the summer going, okay, what's the point?
Right.
Then what happened? They went behind closed doors and negotiated for real. I mean, it's the way it's done.
But then they come out with a 40-page package, and you and I as journalists, we're focusing on the biggest news in the first 5 or 6 items.
Yep.
And we can't get around to the 10 other largely minor things.
It gives us lots of stuff to write about in late June or early July.
It does.
The budget.
It really, really does.
But yeah, I mean, they know they can get stuff in that would normally get, like, blown up because of the focus on other things.
Okay. A final question on this subject. We can run all night tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We can run till 2:00 tomorrow morning and then come back on Saturday, or we can push in the next weekend. I think I saw in your latest update you expect next week.
That's the feeling. Now, there's, again, I haven't made any calls this morning yet to find what the latest plan was, but the feeling people I was talking to yesterday was they'll likely go all day today into tonight, try and get a lot done, but then DOT and Bucks probably come up Tuesday, maybe.
Okay.
So I would have a good bet they'll come back next week right now. And early this week, Nygren raised that problem. Yes, we might come back in and do it next week. Who wants to be in there on Saturday?
Okay, now let's go into what's become our weekly, how's the governor doing on the presidential beat? There are now 8 declared candidates. Let me get them right. George Pataki, Rick Santorum in today. Join Ms. Fiorina, Cruz, Mr. Cruz, Rubio, Paul, Carson, Huckabee. Is Governor Walker's position more the merrier?
He's doing well in the polls. I saw one out of Pennsylvania yesterday that he was in top tier. He's off to New Hampshire later on today. So while we're all enjoying finance sweltering, he will be giving a speech to a sunset cruise somewhere in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
has events tomorrow as well. But interesting, the Walker phenomenon is interesting now that he gave an interview a week ago on a radio show, which he talked about the ultrasound bill, right?
Yes. He's,
and he was talking about ultrasounds and how, in
quote,
general,
it's just a cool thing.
But that was referenced to ultrasounds in general. Some liberal outlets took that as, oh, he's saying that the requirement is cool and ran with that,
yep.
Which gave Walker and sort of media the opportunity to go, look, those crazy liberal journalists again going off on the wrong tangent, trying to smear the governor, makes him a martyr again for conservatives. I mean, that stuff is, you can't buy that kind of exposure for Governor Walker with the base going, up, they're after him. He must be something, a real threat to them.
And he also said this week that it's his intent to campaign basically everywhere, except maybe in Florida,
yeah.
Which has Rubio and Bush, which means I'm all in for Iowa and the straw poll, which he had to be in anyway because he was born in Plainfield, Iowa.
But the straw poll, he is not committed to it. And they had an organizational meeting this week, and I read some national media, like Twitter somewhere, that his people weren't there. So now I can't confirm that or anything like that. But there are signs he might not compete because the straw poll has become this outdated, like, exercise that's all about bringing people in, you know, and paying them to show up.
Right.
It's this big, I mean, it's supposed to be a measure of organizational strength, if you will. But look who's won and how they've done the presidential race. How's President Bachmann doing right now, by the way?
And also, it was the Iowa straw poll that took Tommy Thompson out of the race because he finished sixth.
Did very poorly. So there's...
How can he avoid it?
It's a good question. You're like, what does he do?
You're born in Iowa. You've spent a lot of time in Iowa. You've shown pictures, you know, of the church where your dad preached. How can he not play in the Iowa straw poll?
Good question, but others might not play as well. I mean, it is kind of a... I've read stories that talk about how this is a difficult decision for Walker and others because of the things you're mentioning and because he is going in on Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. Now, Florida, it makes some sense to skip because you've got two native sons on the ballot. I mean, that's going to be a tough one to crack for anybody.
Yep. Okay. Okay. Let's go into your let's go into the Wisconsin stock report.
So the state Democratic Party chair race. Now we've got some mud flying.
Five candidates, Martha Lanning and Jason Ray and Joe Wenneke, former chair, and former reps Stephen Smith and Jeff Smith.
Excuse me. So in talking to people, there's a perception of a three-way race between Wenneke, Lanning, and Ray. There's also mud being thrown at Wenneke, Lanning, and Ray online. What's fascinating is the average person is not paying attention to this race at all or clued in. But if you read the blogosphere and social media, they're raising questions about, well, Martha Lanning is kind of, does have a spotty voting record, for example. How can she the party? She only joined 15 months ago. They're looking at quotes she had about minimum wage when she ran for the state senate.
She said she doesn't support going to $15 on the minimum wage.
That's a key plank for Democrats.
Yep.
So they're picking on that. Jason Ray, for example, the firm he works for, Nation Consulting, has done work with conservative groups. That's kind of like we're talking about the purest purity test, if you will, we have our state party chair races. So that's an issue. Even though Ray says, I wasn't working with those clients, that Nation says those were mine, Ray wasn't involved, there's that issue. Also, you know, there are certain people in the base who aren't fans of Mike Tate. The party's had a rough 6 years in terms of election
Senator
results.
Senator Vinehout.
2012, hey, got Tammy Baldwin and President Barack Obama. They both won the state, but had bad results in 10 and 14.
36 members of the assembly.
So there's a perception of that Ray could kind of continue the Tate path. Wenneke, he got gruff when he was chair the last time around because he lobbied for AT&T while he was chair. Now, back then, it was a voluntary job. It wasn't a paid position like it is now under Tate. But there are all kinds of things thrown around. I get the impression that because it's in Milwaukee, that would give Jason Ray a leg up because that's his home base. So you would think that would play into his tendencies. But it's going to be interesting. They should have a really well-tentative convention on Saturday. And I expect it to be a little bit, a little bit tense.
Yes, and just FYI, Wisconsin and I conducted 30-minute interviews with all five candidates. You know what I find intriguing on this issue? There's going to be one ballot. So whoever gets like 36, 37, 38% is the next chair.
In theory, it could be 21%, but yeah, more
that's
likely.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
That's also fascinating. Okay, that was rising, mixed.
Robin Voss, we talked about the policy part, right, about the not the votes. Let's talk about the politics of it, okay? So, talk radio is beating up on Robin Voss. He is public enemy number one right now about prevailing wage because he's, in their eyes, he is the one holding up. Again, even though Scott Fitzgerald said, I don't have the votes either. But for Robin, look at it this way. He's looking at next fall going, okay, it's going to be a presidential year. We're at 63 votes. We have overperformed our maps. The maps are good for Republicans. They're not 63 votes good for Republicans, all right? They've got seats they shouldn't have. They have a tough time holding on to all of those. He's convinced, from what people tell me, that this is one issue that could cost him four or five seats.
Okay.
A couple of reasons. One, there are a number of voters out there in Wisconsin who are hard hat labor guys, who are socially conservative, who don't like taxes, but they hold a union card. They are natural Republicans who will vote for the GOP. But you've now done right to work, hurts them. Prevailing wage, yep. You're talking about, they're not fans of that. If you push this through, it's one more reason for them to go, you know what? I'm not going to vote these causes. I'm going to vote my union card.
So is he worried about the Todd Novaks and the Kathy Berniers and the
Heaton's
Quinns?
Up in Wausau, these people who have marginally Democratic seats.
Oh, Dave Heaton, yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
So there's that piece of it. Now, okay. There are also interest groups that donate money that are affected by prevailing wage. The road builders, for one, they've been big donors to Republicans over the years. Might they say, you know what, this is enough. We can't do this anymore. We're going to go over here. So there's that factor as well. So Robin's perspective is, leave no man behind. I'm not going to take my 63 members and sacrifice four or five just to get this bill through. Because the philosophy is, if not now, then when, right? Mm-hmm. For prevailing wage advocates, reform advocates are saying, look, 63 votes in the Assembly, we got 19 in the Senate, we got a governor who's Republican. Now is the time to do this. And Robin's saying, no, you know, it's not worth losing these guys because I know it's not going to pass in the Senate anyway.
Okay.
And then there's the intrigue about, again, what happens to Andre Jacques, you yes. know? That'll be kind of a gauge, if you will, of Robin's governing style or leadership style. What's he going to do? Now, I've talked to Republicans. I have not sensed anybody is looking to, you know, depose him or anything
like
that.
No, I don't pick up anything on a coup here for Robin Voss.
No. So he's taking these hits from Talk Radio because of this, but he's also keeping his caucus in mind, if you will.
Yeah, that's a good choice for mixed. Falling.
The city of Madison. So it's a long list in this budget the last couple of years. Now, we have this week.
This week, the room tax.
Room tax, that affects a lot of people. So basically, finance put a provision in the budget that's a bill that's been out there, hasn't passed. Last couple of sessions, it says you have to dedicate this much of your room tax to tourism, and you can't spend it directly, municipalities. You have to give it to a commission mm-hmm. or a board that will spend it on tourism promotion.
That's the Amy Laudenbeck provision, I think.
Yeah, so for cities like Madison, who don't have that restriction now, it restricts how you spend that money. It
Madison
affects a
is
lot
now,
of people.
Well, the State Journal reported today, Madison is collecting $12.9 million from the room tax, five of which they're using for general operations.
Yes, and I believe that Mayor Sauglin predicted that next year alone $1 million they'd lose just from this change.
If you have the 70% provision.
But that impacts everybody pretty okay. much.
But
let's
you were
go to the Madison things.
But that you were saying that's only the most recent poke
yes.
in the eye to the city of Madison.
This week, provision put the budget that the state administration now would have to do a cost analysis, a cost-benefit analysis of moving agencies, divisions, whatever offices outside of Dana, Milwaukee counties, look for a cheaper rate, if you will. Now, Madison's the state has required the county to be the seat of government, but there's no requirement, for example, that the DNR is here. Now, they've got these buildings downtown where thousands of employees work, but they can move them elsewhere if it's cheaper
right.
under this provision. We'll see if it passes the governor's pen. But
maybe to Senator Tom Tiffany's district. Go ahead.
Yeah. But Senator Darling said, the co-chair, we think we should get a better for taxpayers. If they're expensive office space downtown Madison, maybe it'd be cheaper to go somewhere else.
Okay.
So there's another possible hit to Madison. Then we go to, they're going to exempt the DOT new headquarters on the west side of Madison.
Yes,
exempt
Hill Farms office building.
Exempt from local zoning ordinances. Those no longer apply to the project. Now, Senator Erpenbach asked, okay, does this apply just to the building? Because remember, it's a 22-acre project, right? They're going to rebuild the entire thing. Does this apply to the building or the entire project? And LFB said, we think it was meant for the building, but it's not quite clear.
Unclear.
So it could exempt a 22-acre site from right. local zoning laws. That's interesting. Then go back even further, okay? We had a bill that passed this session that would exempt Uber and Lyft from local zoning ordinances, right? Ride-sharing companies. Well, Madison and Milwaukee, they had both looked at those and dealt with that issue. Go back last session. They nixed, basically undercut local tenant and landlord relationship
laws. Yeah, they wrote a one law fits all for
yes.
landlord relations.
So Madison is obviously more progressive and liberal than the average Republican member of the Assembly and the Senate. It is out there compared to them. And they're basically starting to impose their will, if you will, or restrict what Madison can do. And they always complain, locals, what about local control? You Republicans keep telling us about local control, keep doing this. And
mm-hmm.
Republicans keep saying, well, look, you have a reputation of being difficult with DOT billing, difficult to work with to develop. We have to get these things done. It's time to get the train rolling, and you're not helping.
That's a good choice. Let's close on this note. Let's update just quickly on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. former Chief Justice Shirley Abramson has appealed Judge Peterson's ruling, refusing to issue an injunction, barring the new Chief Justice. So you have the former Chief Justice going to the U.S. Court of Appeals to appeal Judge Peterson's ruling, and now the current Chief Justice hires an interim court administrator, and Justice Bradley says, time out, not hired properly, don't start work, Dennis Moran. So we have, they continue to invent new definitions of collegiality and civility.
Yeah, I would say that if anybody thought that there was going to be a gentler court, if you will, with a change in power, it hasn't happened yet. Now, it could be growing pains, and once the court decisions come down and everything is settled, it'll change. But for now, they're not going quietly into the night, let's put it that way.
They are not. And what rewind 1 week from now, we should be able to walk through the final decisions on transportation, UW, stewardship, and maybe we'll get to the bottom of that pork barrel omnibus final amendment.
Let's hope we're done by then.
Let's hope. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 29th.